It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk about cultivating healthy masculinity with mental health and sexual health educator Craig Biedemann. But first, the very best professors can bring any topic they teach to life, but that doesn't mean they get to teach exactly what they want to teach. The bucket courses at Drake Community Library in Grinnell give professors and others the opportunity to teach about something they're really passionate about, and it gives members of the community a chance to learn from the best. Keisho Scott is an associate professor of American Studies and Sociology at Grinnell College. She chose to dedicate her bucket course this winter to the Black Holocaust, and we've asked her here today to give us a short course on this pivotal part of world history. Hello, Keisho.
Hello, and thank you for this invitation. Well, I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. Thank you so much for coming back to the show. And tell me a little bit, you had the opportunity with this bucket course to choose to teach about anything you wanted to teach about. Why did you choose to teach about the Black Holocaust?
I am, by training, someone who teaches social movements. And I had a chance to look at the Holocaust in Poland in particular. And what became apparent to me is that there are so many memorials and bodies of work on the study of the Polish Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust, and some for the indigenous Holocaust, but I didn't see anything about the Black Holocaust. So I began to borrow that trope of Holocaust and look at the experience of trafficking Africans throughout the world over a 10th century period.
And let's talk about that word Holocaust,
okay,
because when people use it, they usually say the Holocaust, as if the mass murder of Jewish people in Europe is the only time this has happened in history. However, that's certainly not the only Holocaust that humans have perpetrated.
Absolutely not. In fact, in borrowing that trope, we can say Holocaust. We can put an S on that. And if that word Holocaust is associated with cataclysm, destruction, catastrophe, you know, a humiliation, ravaging, violence, then certainly what happened with the trafficking of Africans throughout the world is a Holocaust. And I was interested in hammering very clearly how do we frame that, and how, because most people have no knowledge when they talk about slavery, they're talking about what happened in America. They don't know it on a global scale. And I was interested in making a presentation that would give it a global spin.
And why do you think changing the language? Because, you know, we have taught about the slave trade in the last year. We have marked the 400th anniversary of the first time that enslaved Africans arrived on our shores with many different projects. The 1619 Project out of the New York Times,
yes,
really one of the most notable. Changing this language, I mean, I'm sure many people hear it and think, I don't know what you're talking about. But why does that help the history become more understandable?
Okay, so let me give three specific short examples. When we talk about changing the language so that we can deepen our understanding, we can then begin to realize that, for an example, number one, there was more than one slave route. There was the transatlantic slave route, which is part of the experience of the Americas, but there was a trans-Saharan slave route centuries before, and there was a trans-Indian ocean route also, which took enslaved Africans to as far away as Iran and Saudi Arabia. So just deepening, changing the language and deepening our understanding begins to help us see the routes were more complex than we know. The second thing is that when we talk about where were the places, where were the spaces of enslavement, why build 43 castles on the west coast of Africa? That meant this was an intentional activity, which was part of why Europe developed rapidly. How did human cargo replace the things that they initially traded in the trades with Africans. And later, the power dynamics of the world have been impacted by the enslavement of African people and why it was global participation. And let me add one more third point, that when we start talking about the impact of that enslavement, we've got to look at how people were captured, how they were enslaved, how then they were transported, and then where their embarkment took place, and how that impacted communities that were not diverse, and what was the staggering profit that was part of the enslavement of Africans. So the language changing in my mind and going a little bit further in my study is to try to help people talk about what they find so difficult to talk about. Just slavery itself was not just the story.
Let's talk about what was happening in Africa before enslaved people were put on those ships, because that moment when trafficked individuals were put on those ships is where our understanding of the slave trade usually starts. So tell me what we know about what was happening before that.
Well, let me say this. I am not a scholar of African history. What I'm learning and appreciating is that African scholars are beginning to excavate that history and give their interpretation, not a Eurocentric interpretation, but their interpretation of what was happening in Africa about the 10th century. Now, we know that the emergence of Islam, we know that the emergence of the nation state, these things were happening in parts of different parts of Africa, and they were having an impact on their economic and their political development. So the introduction of European transatlantic slave trade, in particular for 400 years, was preceded by 600 years with the Arab trade of African people. So there was one internal conflict between the various groups. They weren't the same nation states that we would call them now in terms of African countries. And second, there was the impact of contact between Muslims and Africans. So what made African people vulnerable is those interactions. And our history, when I say our, I'm talking about the American thread, that Anglo thread from Britain in particular, is the part that we name in terms of the last 400 years.
2019 was designated by Ghana as the Year of Return, an opportunity for members of the African diaspora to return to Ghana, to return to Africa, and learn about their heritage, but also learn about this terrible time in history. Last time you were on the show, we talked about your journey, your trip back, and that included a visit to one of these slave castles. Tell me about that experience.
Thank you for asking me that, because to visit that castle at 20 years old and to visit that castle at 66 years old was a tremendous shift. When I went when I was 20, I was ignorant. I really didn't know there were monuments to the enslavement of African people called castles. They're actually dungeons. And when I revisited at 66 and began to see that these are now international monuments for the never again philosophy that has emerged throughout the world wherever Holocaust have existed, it warmed my heart. So it's still very difficult to see these slave castles, to literally stand in one and realize that you're probably a descendant of someone who walked out in the door of no return. That was what was the most graphic. And then to see that now, you know, hundreds and thousands of people visit these dungeons, castles every year in reparation and in forgiveness of this worldwide trafficking of African people. So I think the most powerful thing is that in calling attention to the Black Holocaust, we can call attention to what is the process in which we could understand and know that this never has to happen again.
We were talking earlier about the power of language, and another piece of language that has changed over time, the way that we use it has changed over time. But I think about when I learned about the slave trade as a child and the Civil War, et cetera, calling the people who were enslaved slaves was what was done. And I've noticed that your language and the language of many other scholars is very careful about that, because the word slave sort of robs each individual who was trafficked, who was enslaved, of their humanity. Tell me more about how we should be thinking about these individuals who were taken.
You know, thank you again, because it's really important. You know, most people don't know, for an example, that during the colonial era in 1705, the Slave Act was passed. And in that Slave Act, it defined an enslaved person as a piece of property. And in doing so, it made the transportation of enslaved people to the Americas a project of wealth making. So that, for example, we know that many of the slave ships that left Britain, for an example, were insured. And if they were successful, they made profit. If they weren't, they won from insurance on the slaves that they didn't capture. So the language is really important. That's one part. The second part is, you're right, we know so little of the development of Africa that we define slave as someone who is black, and that erased all of those cultures that these enslaved people came from. We don't know about the Benin Empire, we don't know about the empires, and I don't want to give, there's so many to list, but my point is that if we start talking about enslaved Africans, then we can begin to talk about how they survived and what aspects of their cultural survival in the New World.
And Keisho, we're going to have to take a short break. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back in just a moment. I'm talking with Keisho Scott of Grinnell College about the Black Holocaust. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I'll talk with mental health and sexual health educator Craig Biedemann about cultivating healthy masculinity and some of the challenges that men in our modern world face. But right now, we're talking about the Black Holocaust. With me is Keisho Scott. She's an associate professor of American Studies and Sociology at Grinnell College, and she recently taught a course at Drake Community Library in Grinnell about the Black Holocaust that includes the history of the slave trade worldwide. It also includes the time before enslaved people were put on ships and sent around the world, what happened in Africa, the legacy of what happened in Africa, and the legacy around the world as well. And Keisho, just before the break, we were talking about how important it is to understand who was taken, who these people were who were trafficked, and how the language we use erases some of the humanity of these individuals. When the slave trade was operating, this systematic abduction of people and murder of people at the same time, I mean, it was a very carefully crafted movement to take the kind of people that they thought would be most valuable, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's very difficult to take the body of the Bucket Course and try to talk about it in a 30-minute session. Mm-hmm. So the questions that you're answering are very powerful, and I want to say I appreciate that. I want to say, in saying that, I want to say that one of the connections that the Bucket Course exhibited was the connection between when people were trafficked and the state of Africa today, right? What's the connection? What has been the impact? I want to draw a particular example, because the brutality of slavery, enslavement, the capture, the brutality of enslavement and transportation. There's a lot of documentation about that, but there's not a lot of talk about the impact of this system. Let me give you a correlation. Let's imagine that we were looking at the city of Grinnell, which is 9,112 people, and we removed 40% of the population of that town, because what happened in enslavement of Africans is depopulation. We took people away. That meant you left women and children, and you left the elder population. What happened to communities when you didn't have the best, the strongest, the warriors, when you didn't have those people? These are the ways in which studying the Black Holocaust today are making links to what is happening in Africa today, because Africa is a continent of countries that are trying to develop beyond what has been the impact of 500 years of colonization. And so the staggering profit that was made, by the way, 10,000 ships alone left Britain to be in part of the slave. That was only one of five European countries involved. The impact on Africa was in loss of family ties, psychological, cultural confusion, and the destabilization of political states as they knew it for centuries. So that is why studying the Black Holocaust, beyond just looking at the institution of slavery, is so important, because it helps us connect with what we might look at how Africa is developing itself past slavery and past colonization.
Now, your participation in the Year of Return, that gives an opportunity for Africans to tell their story, to talk about their place in this. And you mentioned that African scholars are doing a great deal of research. Is this an area of scholarship that you see exploding, a thing that people are beginning to understand in new ways?
Absolutely. What's really interesting is in the last 50 years, many of the African scholars have not been Africans themselves. And what is developing is a whole cadre of people in which they are speaking about their own cultural experience and continental experience. So that's one of the exciting points. The other one is that we're beginning to look at the enslavement population as not just one gendered experience. So for an example, when you start looking at the enslavement of women, you tell a very different story, because they were sexually abused as well as made cargo. We talk about the 5 million biracial children that were born that they estimate in the 400 years. Like, what happened to those children? Because the slavers did not bring their wives to the continent of Africa. So we're starting, just asking gendered questions is giving us a whole body of information that we did not know before.
Bringing this history to Grinnell, Iowa, in talking to audiences there, were you surprised by how your audience reacted, how your students of your bucket course reacted to this information? Because I'm guessing for a lot of them, this is really new.
Well, first of all, I walked into the community library and it was packed with people. Many of those people I knew from the college and the community, and many of them were absolutely open and willing to participate in an experiential way of learning about this enslavement of Africans. So many of them had feelings of, wow, I did not know how much money was made. I did not know who the countries were. I did not know what a slave dungeon was. I did not know, only 500,000 enslaved people came to what we now call America, and the other 12 to 15 million died en route or died in places where they were worked to death. They were never expected to live. So I think there were people who were wild out of their mind just with the body of knowledge. But then there were people who said to me, now I know why it's so difficult to talk about. How do we do reparation? How do I how do I look at my family's history and some of the businesses in the United States that benefited colleges and universities? And we made a whole long list of companies that their original wealth was connected to the enslavement of Africans globally. So I think it was a learning experience. It was an emotional experience. It was a chance for people to take ownership with the part that might have been connected to their families and to really take on the staggering impact of what depopulation of any community could do to a community. And I think I was, as a scholar, doing this course and getting such a wonderful reception from people in my community, that warmed my heart. It cannot be better than that.
In this past year, there have been a lot of, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of opportunities for people who are really interested in understanding this part of our history to understand it. The 1619 Project is one of those. I've been following the work of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education and their work in trying to develop curriculum or curricula that will better educate students about this period in our world history, because we haven't taught it very thoroughly over really the decades, over the last few hundred years.
Right.
What's your perspective on that? Do you see that changing, or was this a moment in time where, okay, maybe we paid a little more attention in 2019, but Black History Month will go on as it's always gone on? Do you see a movement?
I think a little bit of both. On the one hand, when African scholars are now excavating and telling this story from their point of view, I think we're going to get a deeper and a broader understanding of the impact of enslavement across the world. And that's one. Two, I think that as feminist scholars have entered into this discussion, they raise different kinds of questions. For an example, for many people who saw the movie Black Panther, and they noticed that the warrior women were the protectors of the king at that time, or the leaders at that time, and why were these women, these Dahomeyan women, why were they so strong? Well, this was one of the impacts of depopulation, that women had to expand their roles in agriculture as well as protection of the community when the able-bodied men were taken in terms of enslavement. So feminist scholarship are bringing questions. Angela Davis' work began that in the 70s, but there are other people. So what I'm saying is, I think it's both. I think on the one hand, Black History Month will continue to remind us that what is Black history is American history. But simultaneously, the study of the Black Holocaust will help us understand that when we are now struggling with white supremacy and its reemergence in all of its multiple forms in the world, anti-Black racism, we have a context for that, because the Black Holocaust, in defining people as Black as inferior, was the birth of white supremacy. And we can talk about those things together, right? Nothing pops into human history without a context. So I think that the change in our curriculums around the world and the requirement for global citizenship is to understand global institutions. And the Black Holocaust was one of those global institutions that we can now study in depth.
In your research over the last couple of years, you talked about researching Holocaust tourism, these monuments, and you did go to Poland. You visited Auschwitz, one of the death camps of the Nazis. And I know that that's probably too big an experience to talk a great deal about right now. But in thinking about your experience in Africa and your experience in Poland, what do you think you learned from making those comparisons?
Again, thank you for asking me that, and thank you for asking me to make an interconnection. Just now recognizing that I went to both places, Poland, and watched and saw the very structures and institutions that were used to annihilate first the Polish people who were in resistance to Nazism, and then eventually the Jewish people. And then having been to Africa and saw the Elmina Castle, at least, and the Cape Coast Castle two times in my life, and then recognizing the history of the intentionality of human cargoing people all over the world. Let me tell you something. My heart, I hurt because it was a staggering experience. It is difficult to wrap one's mind around why people would engage in such a behavior. And yet, the opportunity it also gave me was to say, what happened to those people, the resilience of those people, Polish people, Jewish people, and people of African descent to survive those institutions. And I think when I was young, I wasn't able to make that connection because I was hurting and I was a young person. But today, as a senior, I'm able to make that connection. We have to start talking about how those experiences have similarities, how those experiences have made people stronger, and how those experiences have set models for the rest of us so that we never participate in those kinds of institutions of violence and oppression ever again. And I think that's the direction that my research is going in, that as we experience in our country in particular right now, you know, the reemergence of anti-Semitism, we can begin to challenge that because of the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise of anti-Black racism are interlinked. And we can now talk about that interlink. We don't want to be doing this again 50 years from now, right? So I think that would be my take on why it is so important to visit these physical sites and also to learn from them and see the interconnections.
We only have a few minutes left, and not all of us get to go to your bucket course and learn from you. For people who want to learn more about the Black Holocaust and to have a greater understanding of this period of world history, what is your recommendation?
I have three. One, there is a body of literature that one can begin to read. And that it's as simple as Googling. Just Google the information and begin to just read about Holocaust, which will lead you to the Black Holocaust and all of the others. But the second thing is that not be afraid to talk about it. Like, people feel that slavery is a mark of shame, but talk about the resilience of what happened afterwards, how people survived it, and begin to ask those kinds of questions. And third, you can just invite me to come and do the bucket course, do those three talks somewhere else. I would be more than happy to do that. If I get a chance, I will do this again.
We were talking earlier also, Keisho, about language and in talking about human trafficking with the historic slave trade, we also have to recognize that human trafficking is something that still exists today. Is that an important part of this message as well, that slavery is not gone in our world?
The conditions of why people are enslaved and forced labor have not been changed. Absolutely. And so as long as there is a need to exploit human labor, there's going to be trafficking. And so there are larger questions that are at play that are our responsibility for those of us who want to protect humanity. So yes, there is still slavery in Africa and other parts of the world. And one of the sites of gender trafficking is right here in Iowa, one in terms of the Midwest. So yes, these connections, the conditions for why people are trafficked are still here. we need to explore them and we need to challenge them, because we're living and writing our history, our human history, by what we do now. So I would hope that people would be much more opening to using this trope of Holocaust to see other forms of human experience, and starting from the local and moving to the international. I want to thank you for asking me to talk about this. My heart is warm this morning. Thank you.
Well, Keisho, thank you so much for being here. Keisho Scott is an associate professor of American Studies and Sociology at Grinnell College. We've been talking about the Black Holocaust this hour. This is something that she chose to teach about at Drake Community Library in Grinnell when she gave a bucket course at that institution. But it's also an important part of world history. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about men and healthy masculinity, cultivating healthy masculinity in our modern world. My guest will be Craig Biedemann. He'll be giving a speech this weekend in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.